Rain of Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
Let's open up that rave line.
Woohoo! Oh, I can't believe USC is going to do the same thing again, year after year. Oh, no!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rain of Troy Radio, episode 406, coming to you on Wednesday, April 14th. We're going to talk about the latest in USC football, including this Saturday's upcoming spring game at the Coliseum, which will include fans inside the Coliseum for the first time since 2019. Exciting times all around, and we're going to talk it out here in this episode. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Rain of Troy, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Rain of Troy. Be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, Google Play, Omni, wherever you can find a podcast, we are there. Our bonus episodes are on Patreon, patreon.com/reignoftroy. Our email address is reignoftroy@fansided.com, and our phone number is 213-373-1USC. Suck it, what's Bruin Show. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host here in the Rain of Troy studio in Los Angeles, Alicia D'Artola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. We are back to talk about a bunch of stuff, including the spring game. Super amped up for the spring game. We're going to get to that when we do the news segment and what's going to be unique, seemingly unique about this year's spring. Unique, maybe not unique, but refreshing.
Refreshing is the word, yes.
Yeah, I would say that. Refreshing in the sense that it feels like in a lot of ways, you know, COVID's coming to an end. People are getting vaccinated, which is good to see. California doing its job to get people vaccinated, which if you haven't, go do that. Sign up, find a way to get a vax and help do your part for society. But, hey, it feels like everything's coming to an end, and at the same time we get things like, you know, the Arclight shutting down. It's an interesting time.
I'm sad because Arclight was like my favorite theater. It was right down the street from my house. I loved having the like assigned seating and comfortable seating, and I loved the little restaurant that they had at the Arclight near my house. Like, I liked grabbing a beer and taking it into the theater. And I know you can do that in other theaters, but like that was like my place. So I'm kind of really bummed out.
Yeah, it was a good place. I only went to the Arclight once. I saw David Gilmour's Live in Pompeii at the Arclight.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yeah, it was good, except my uncle kept singing all the words to the song. And I'm like, you're spoiling this for everybody else. People came and paid money to hear David Gilmour sing, not you.
Yeah. Okay. So as someone who likes to sing along to music, but has the inability to stay on key, like I get it. I can't help but sing along to things, but like I do try, like I try to keep low so that I'm not disturbing other people's listening experiences, but I'm sure I do. I don't know.
My favorite thing about you is when you're listening to music with headphones on and singing, it is great. You guys are missing out, I swear. I need to like record and like put it on Twitter when this happens. It's just
the funny thing is I don't even notice I'm doing it.
It's great.
Like you'll like tell me like you realize you were singing or whatever, and I've got like noise canceling headphones, so like I'm not even noticing that I am singing along. But I do. I sing along, and like I'm one of the things in life. I wish that I could sing well. My mother can sing, and like I wish that I could sing well because I enjoy singing, but I am so bad at it. It's just...
I can confirm that part. I can confirm that part.
Yeah. You have a lovely singing voice.
I do. Yeah. I've turned down roles in like Motab.
Sure.
Yeah. I could do it. I could sing if I wanted to.
There you go. Sounds like we need to do a karaoke night or something.
Yeah, karaoke pod. How about that? How about we just sing everything?
No.
This is the rundown. Bonus episodes on Patreon.com.
Yeah, you would have to do all the singing, and I would not, because I wouldn't subject our listeners to that.
Hello, everybody. It's episode 406. Okay, I'm going to shut up now. This is...
You're not going to get me to sing, so there's that. And you're just going to be floating on your own island, like, doing your little song things.
Sure. Anyways, welcome back to the show. It's been a fun week as we look forward to the spring game. We're going to talk about that in the news segment and our longer segment at the end, where we talk about five things each of us are looking forward to on Saturday afternoon in the Coliseum for the spring game. But there is a bit of news, so let's get to that first. Alicia, it is time for the news.
Okay.
This is not good.
Okay, so hold on. You're Catholic.
This voice I'm doing is, I've never sung like that before.
It's reminding me of like...
Oh, when you go to church and the
have you ever had the priest sing? Yeah.
Can you do it? Do it.
I don't have the tune. And A, like, I can't sing either.
It always
way.
Sounds so unnatural.
No, but like there's like a tune that they sing, and then they sort of fit the words into the tune.
Yeah, you gotta go, the spring game is open to 5,000.
Yeah, like exactly like
donors
that.
Donors and season ticket holders will be sent an email to buy tickets.
Exactly.
Like, I can't do it, but it's something to that effect.
My uncle does it. My uncle's a priest. He does it often. So like... I don't know what...
Isn't that funny? He's both your uncle and a father?
He is. We used to call him Uncle Father Jesuit Joe.
There you go. That's legit.
Yeah. But I should ask him sometime, like, what is it that the priest decides I'm going to do the singing thing or I'm not going to do the singing thing?
I don't know, but they probably look at the rundown and go, 4:12. Okay, we're going to shut up before everyone completely tunes out of this thing. SC's spring game at the Coliseum. This is the big news. On Saturday, it's going to be live on the Pac-12 network, if you get that. It's going to be open to 5,000 fans. Donors and season ticket holders getting the first crack sent with an email to buy tickets. The game is going to be 4 12-minute live tackling scrimmage periods with a squad split into Team Cardinal and Team Gold. I am super pumped for this, not just because there'll be fans there, but this is seemingly they're making it seem like it's going to be an actual game this year, and not like we've seen these things in the past where they have scrimmage periods. There was one year under Sark, I want to say like 2014, where it just felt like literally just a practice.
Well, that was the year they did not have enough defensive linemen to have a scrimmage period. So, yeah, that was, I mean, it's been at least a decade, if not longer, of legitimate spring showcases that are just they're glorified practice. Right. Sometimes they do a little bit more scrimmage, but like the scrimmages that we would have seen on like a Saturday practice or at Howard Jones Field, that's essentially what fans were turning up to watch at the Coliseum. And like my take on that was always like a day out at the Coliseum is just nice. But people got to know what they're getting into when they go to the showcase, because practice is not always the biggest thing.
Yeah, people want to see football, right? They want to see something that is as close to being what we think of as football. And that's scrimmage. That's not necessarily routes on air or any of those type of things, one-on-one drills. I think people like watching the Oklahoma drill, the Trojan drill on like YouTube or something like that. I'm not sure you want to show up to the Coliseum and watch that when you got all these people huddled around. You can barely see it anyways. But 4 12-minute live tackling scrimmage periods sounds like a blast. We'll be able to really see how players have come along thus far in spring, how they've developed. There's plenty of newcomers are going to be there. Fans get a first view at Jackson Dart and Miller Moss. some early enrollees, transfers like Katie Nixon, Keontae Ingram. It's going to be really, really, really fun to see how everything comes together. 1 p.m. at the Coliseum on Saturday. And like I said, also broadcast on the Pac-12 Network. One person you won't be seeing is Brandon Peely. He is out. And this is not good for USC's defensive line because gone is Jay Tuvele. Gone is Marlon Tuipulotu. He is someone that's supposed to be kind of the returning veteran on that defensive line. And if he's not there, that's a problem.
Yeah, and it you know, we weren't there for the Saturday practice, but the reports that I saw on Twitter from all the people that were there was that he had to be helped off the field and couldn't put any weight on his leg. It sounds like a potentially serious injury. So we don't know exactly how long he'll be out for, but we definitely won't be seeing him on Saturday. The silver lining on this is that, you know, in the spring, you want to get the young guys as many reps as possible. You want to give them the opportunity to show what's up. And I think that so far, we've seen some really bright things from guys like Jamar Sakona and Jay Toya and certainly Tuli Tupelotu and those younger guys that are looking to come up through this defensive line. So on the one hand, like, it's good that they're going to be able to benefit from this. But if this is the kind of thing that keeps Peely out for, you know, into the season, then that is a veteran presence that USC is missing. And, you know, USC lost him for the season early. I think it was right before the ASU game, in fact.
Was it in a broken finger?
Yeah, like it was some sort of, broken.
One of those things that wouldn't necessarily have cost him a full
regular
season.
Yeah, but a season like 2020, yeah, it did have that impact. So, you know, it's a complication that USC is going to have to figure out. The good thing is here that they have some time to figure that out, and they're going to be able to get some silver lining benefit from this by putting Jamar Sakona and Jay Toya and Stanley Taufo'o and those guys into the middle of things in practice and get to see what they're made of.
Yeah, that's the one thing about a spring injury is it's sort of like a silver linings playbook for improving the football team going forward. No, this is similar to what we talked about last week with Max Williams. Max Williams out for the year with an ACL tear. Is that the bright side about losing someone to a serious injury early is that you kind of learn to live with the fallout and you're forced to make changes early on to the point that when you get to the season, those guys are ready. They're sort of proven within the system. They're proven within the experience, getting first team reps and all that stuff to get ready to go. So if that's the case for Brandon Peely, if he's going to be out for an extended time into the season, at least you would be able to see what Sakona and Kobe Pepe and whoever else ends up getting time up there up front can do. The defensive line has been dominating the offensive line. This is something that we saw last week when we were at practice. This is something all the reports have been Saturday after Saturday's practice as well. At this point, are we worried about the offensive line a little bit?
I think you have to be. Just track records come into play here. This is a defensive line that I think you can get excited about. I think everyone has good reason to be excited about Tuli Tupelotu and a few of those guys, but they're also largely unproven. And this offensive line is a bunch of seniors, extra seniors, veteran multi-year starters. They shouldn't be behind at this point. Certainly not going. I mean, you have bright young talents on that defensive line, but like these aren't elite level, like All-American level defensive linemen that USC is throwing out there right now. They have guys with potential, but the offensive line should be ahead of them. And it's worrying that this is yes, you lost Elijah Vera Tucker, but you returned four of the five. So it's not like you're completely remaking the line. You shouldn't be getting dominated every practice.
The interesting thing about SC's offensive line is, yes, there's so much experience there. When you're talking about four of the five spots, even Liam Jones, someone who has experience now. But you got Voorhees and you got Nealon, you got McKenzie. those guys are up there with the wealth of experience of any USC lineman ever in terms of game starts and all that stuff. Like, one of the most veteran, you know, trios that you could imagine on this line, right? They all got time plenty early on in their careers, and here they are as seniors, super seniors in some cases, trying to still be a part of this offensive line. But the offensive line, despite all of the experience, they're without the players in their same class that, you know, have moved on to the NFL. The first round talent like Austin Jackson, who went to the Dolphins as a first rounder, and without Elijah Vera Tucker, we expect to be a first rounder. So these guys are the experienced dudes. Are they the first round talent? No. But that doesn't mean that they can't be good. You want the experience to still be valuable, but I think this goes back to the sense of, we've talked about it before, video games and life are two different things. And we always think about, you know, in video games, you're going to get more XP and you're going to come back the next season. You're going to keep improving and going forward. And it kind of feels like for SC, when you look at the veteran players on this offensive line, they are what they are. I don't think this is a terrible offensive line, but I think they are what they are. They're an offensive line that is flawed. And SC's, until that gets proven wrong, gets proven otherwise, until Nealon and until Voorhees and until McKenzie and Jimmins can really take a huge step forward, this just is what it is right now. Fortunately for SC, there is a new coach, Clay McGuire, so maybe he can get more out of this offensive line despite so many continued faces from the last couple of years. But it's early, but again, they need to prove that they've taken a step forward before I'm ready to believe it, especially if the defensive line, a young, unproven unit like USC's right now, is getting, you know, the better side of them every time.
Well, and they haven't even really gone up against Drake Jackson yet. So, like, I don't know. I think it's too early to make a judgment, because Clay McGuire, even if he was a miracle worker, wouldn't be able to work miracles in six practices. But I also don't think Clay McGuire is a miracle worker. So, like, will USC be that much further ahead once we get into August? Maybe. You have to hope. But, like, I'm a little bit worried that the offensive line has remained as is, essentially. I don't know if I would feel better if I saw them mixing and matching more. Like, if I just saw them, like, experimenting with other things. I don't even know if that would fix something. I don't even know if that's, like, the way to do it. Just, it feels like USC is very much a status quo on the offensive line with Cortland Ford at left tackle. And, like, on the one hand, yeah, that's good because you want chemistry to be built in with that line. But, like, those four guys have already had chemistry together. So, like, that's not what's holding this group back. And what's holding this group back, my fear is that they're just not good enough to overcome the schematic difficulties that I think USC has thrown in their way. Now, we haven't had a chance to see whether or not those
could be
fixed.
Too, right, though?
It could be they're just not good enough.
It could be that the scheme isn't good enough.
Well, the
to
scheme
overcome
either the scheme
else,
either
right?
The scheme hasn't been fixed, or the players aren't good enough, or
it's a mixture,
a combination
of both, right?
Of both, which, yeah, is almost always the answer to things. But, like, it's still too early to make those claims. But like you said, like, we've seen what this offensive line is for a couple of years, for several years now. So, like,
right,
it's up to them to change our minds. Like, I'm going to stop giving them the benefit of the doubt. And they're going to have to reverse the sort of perception that is built around them. And so far, I mean, so far in the first couple of weeks of practice, they haven't done that. So that is their burden to prove that they can be better than they were before. But I'm not going to assume that, well, like you said, video games, like, I'm not going to assume that this year they're just all going to tick up a few grades in their you know, player score, and suddenly USC will be good.
Yeah, I not to cape for the scheme, because I think there's plenty of areas that SC can improve there, but the scheme wasn't preventing Elijah Vera Tucker from standing out, you know? So I think if...
Right, but a first-round draft pick can stand out because they, on their own, can block their man.
Sure.
But yeah, USC's problem is that too many, like,
right, but,
only two guys on that line were blocking their man consistently.
Right,
so
what I'm saying is if these four guys besides Courtland Ford, because I feel like it's too early to
he's the only one
judgment
that
get, on
him
Courtland
or
Ford.
Whoever else is vying for that job are the only ones who get a pass here because
right.
we
it's
don't
only,
have
right.
yeah
they're the youngsters of the bunch. But no, like the way I look at it is if there was first round talent on this offensive line from left guard to right tackle, we'd know that by now. Because if nothing else, they would flash. And there isn't first round talent there.
No.
And
but you shouldn't have to have first round talent.
Correct. Yeah. Like, it should be a mixture of if you don't have the first round talent, then the scheme can make up for that. Or if you don't have the scheme, your talent makes up for that, all told. And SC is somewhere in the middle where they're seemingly deficient in both aspects.
Yeah, which is not acceptable for a program like USC.
Yeah, and hopefully it's just early for Clay Maguire and things will come together later on. So
and again,
we'll see.
Clay Maguire, USC is asking a lot of Clay Maguire here. Like, the Clay Maguire hire should have been made 3 years ago or 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So, like, he is behind the eight ball.
He should
to
have been the
guy. Incredible degree.
That
him or
Graham
someone
Harrell brought in. Yeah.
Or someone of his type. An air raid specialist, essentially, should have been brought in from the get go. The fact that they didn't do that set them back. So now you're in another year where you're now relying on new things to come in and immediately make a difference. Just like last year, they were relying on the defense to immediately come in and make a difference. Like USC has set them up for this just never-ending cascade of growing pains. And my frustration here is that you can have growing pains in a lot of areas, but you have a veteran offensive line, and if they don't prove that they're good enough, then, like, that's on...
A veteran offensive line who were under the tutelage of Tim Drebno, who's not an air raid offensive line coach.
Right, but they're still offensive linemen. Like,
right, yeah.
The buck stops at Clay Helton because he let a non-air raid coach that offensive line, but like...
It also stops at Clay Helton because you look at the talent that SC missed out on, your Penei Sewells, your Sean Ryans, your Jonah Tees, all those guys that SC missed out on the offensive line, they could have had an offensive line that the starting five was Penei Sewell, Austin Jackson, AVT, Sean Ryan, and Jonah T.
Yeah.
That would have been a star-studded blue-chip offensive line with the talent that the Pete Carroll era had, maybe even more so, because I think people overrate the talent that those teams had. You look back and they weren't completely full of five
stars.
That
is exactly my point, though. Those Pete Carroll teams, those offensive lines weren't... Like
they performed like
they
five
were
stars.
Performed, but it's not like those were like the top five was all five star, you know, top 50 players. No, there were four stars. There were some three stars mixed in.
Deuce Latouille was a JUCO transfer.
They were players that became something as a collective and as individuals. And that is what USC has lacked. The only thing that has become of USC linemen recently is as individuals. So like that needs to change. And I don't know if this is the year that it changes, but I don't think it's unfair to judge this line harshly. I think this line needs to put up or shut up. That's sort of where I'm at. And again, like I said, it's too early in spring to be making like broad judgments, but I am watching with a critical eye and I'm waiting to be impressed.
The other thing is when you look at spring, there's different ways to look at different players, right? Like, we talked about this before. I don't care what Drake London does this spring. He could have one catch and I wouldn't care. Going into week one against San Jose State, he's the guy that I would trust to catch
know
the
what
ball,
he is.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think with this offensive line, they should be to a point where they're so experienced that you're not banking on them to develop. But yet, here we are where they've been a liability on the offense that they still need the development. And at some point, you got to see it. Speaking of Drake London, though, Seth Dagey is comparing him to Michael Crabtree, the Texas Tech legend, the legendary Biletnikoff winner that caught balls from Graham Harrell, famously against Texas in 2008. tiptoeing the sideline, one of the greatest finishes in college football history. Do you see it? Drake London and Michael Crabtree, talk about this comparison that Seth Dagey was putting together.
Well, first and foremost, Seth Dagey and Graham Harrell both played quarterback at Texas Tech while Michael Crabtree was there. So they did see him in more intimately than you know, even fans in the stands were seeing him, because we only saw him on TV or, you know, on the actual game day, where they were seeing him every day in practice, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So, like, they would know, right? I think that the comparison makes sense in the way that Dagey described it. So they're both former basketball players. They both have great body control. They both contest the ball very aggressively and physically. They both use their size to their advantage. Neither one is a super speedster, so that's not what they're relying on. They're relying more on just being big and physical. And Drake London is much bigger too than Michael Crabtree was. But that is, they make it very difficult for people to cover them because they have size and the aggression and the control that they bring to their game is just puts them on a different level. So when Seth Dagey was saying that, he was specifically talking about how teams couldn't figure out how to stop Michael Crabtree on a slant or on a fade, and that that's really where they've seen Drake London when he's working on the outside, that those are the routes that he's unstoppable in when USC uses him in a slant and in a fade. And, like, I can see how, because this is kind of what USC did with Michael Pittman. That was the danger level that Michael Pittman brought to the table, too, is that how are you supposed to defend him on a slant if he gets, you know, gets inside of you? How are you supposed to defend him on a fade when he can outjump you? So I think it's the same kind of perspective that Dagey is bringing to the table now. And I think it's interesting, but it's also creating kind of a weird off-season good problem to have conundrum for USC, because if Drake London can be as good as Michael Crabtree on the outside, then do you play him on the outside? Or do you keep playing Drake London where he's been absolutely dominant on the inside? Do you keep playing him where he opens up other opportunities for people by being on the inside? Do you have anyone to replace him on the inside if you do have him on the outside? How are you going to shuffle things around? Now, the sort of hints that we've gotten are that they're going to move the receivers around a lot this year, not just Drake London, but, like, try to find mismatches with where guys are lining up by being versatile, which I get. Like, I think it could work, but they're going to have to strike a nice balance there to get the most out of everybody.
Yeah, and
I think
I want to see what this means for the tight ends, because we've talked about it before. Drake London being so good inside has taken away the need to have those tight ends being part of the vertical passing game. It's taken away the need to have Josh Swallow out there, because if you have the option of having Drake London lining up at the Y or Josh Swallow, you're going to pick Drake London. If you have, it's the whole, like, you see it with Kyle Pitts over at Florida. Like, people are talking about him as a wide receiver tight end combo.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same thing with Drake London. When he plays inside that way, it fills the gap of what a stand up tight end would be in this offense. So if he's going to be inside, it's less opportunities for the tight ends. If you move him to the outside, potentially that means more opportunities for Michael Trigg, Jude Wolf, Lake McCree, all those guys, Josh Follow still, right? And I want to see how that all comes together, because then there's more of an arsenal to use, but does that take away the top potency of the offense? That's the question, right?
Well, yeah, especially if, you know, the tight ends have to make it worth USC's while to play them, right? Like, that's one of my frustrations. You know, I love the tight end position. It's great. But, like, I hate the way USC uses the tight end position. I'm tired of seeing USC have tight ends out there who aren't being used to catch the ball and are being asked to block things that they can't block. So, like, to me, the way that USC uses the tight end so far has been very flawed. And, you know, in spring camp, they've kind of had to lean on the tight ends a little bit because they don't have a lot of depth at wide receiver to start out with, because Kyle Ford is still limited and Brew McCoy had a couple weeks to get back, and they're still, you know, missing some guys. So like they're sort of leaning on these two tight end sets, but I'm still waiting for the two tight end sets to make sense. In the sense that, like, okay, if you have Eric Cromanhoek out there and you have Jude Wolf out there, like, would you be better off having one of those two guys out there and another wide receiver? Like, USC hasn't convinced me that's the case yet. Like, right now, I would say USC is better off having Cromanhoek out there if they want him to block, and then have London and McCoy and Bryant and Katie Nixon out on the field all at the same time. Like, I would rather see that. So my fear is you take Drake London and say, okay, now we can put him on the outside. Let's go with these two tight end sets and have, and have just a couple wide receivers out there. You're taking Garrett Bryan off the field. You're taking Katie Nixon off the field. You're taking someone else on the field and putting who? You're putting a tight end that you're not going to utilize anyways. So I'm a little bit skeptical of the idea of moving Drake London outside, in the sense that, like, if Drake London's going to move outside, I want somebody else to fill his role, and right. I don't know who it is that can do that.
Well, ideally, you move him outside, he becomes the Michael Pittman.
Yes.
And then you have someone like a Michael Trigg or Jude Wolf or whoever that tight end is that becomes the Drake London,
yes,
right?
Yes, but Michael Trigg won't come until the fall, right? So we'll see him in Trigg. You get the feeling, certainly when they were recruiting him, that he's that guy that they would like to be the next Drake London. So that's very exciting, but we have to wait to see that, right? Seth Doege talked to the media on Tuesday, and he talked about how, you know, Lake McCree has been really exciting, but they need him to bulk up to protect his body. So when they talk like that, you're thinking, okay, they still need some time to get in a college weight program and be ready to go. So now we're talking about Eric Cromanhoek, who you and I are, you know, I think Eric Cromanhoek, the role that he is, what he's asked to do is sort of an underrated thing that USC is asking of him. But I don't know that he's the guy that you say, okay, he's going to replace Drake London as a receiving option. I think that Eric Cromanhoek's best role is to sort of fly under the radar and be an outlet for the quarterback or a blocker. And Seth Doege was really, really complimentary of Cromanhoek in his call on Tuesday. Doege, sorry. Don't put an O in there if it's Doege.
don't blame the German language.
I'm blaming the German language. But either way, he was very complimentary of Cromanhoek and how far he's improved this year. And I sort of want to buy into that. But Josh Fallow is injured again and has always been injured. So, like, I'm not going to put my faith in him. Jude Wolf is now coming from his own injury woes that I'm not going to put my faith in. Ethan Ray has been injured even longer. So, like, I'm running out of tight ends to put my faith in here in terms of, can you be the guy that takes over for London? So now you're putting all of this stake on Michael Trigg. I don't know if that's fair to Michael Trigg, but, you know, maybe he can live up to it. The easier route here is to have Drake London on the inside and let Gary Bryant Jr. and Brew McCoy or Kyle Ford or whoever it is that comes through be those outside forces as well. So I think USC needs to be careful here, because the scheme, I don't want the scheme to get overcomplicated by this idea that, like, well, we're going to lean on the tight ends, you know, but right. We're going to move Drake London, but, you know, like, don't fix what isn't broken.
Yeah, and it sends us on a tangent with Michael Trigg, which is, I don't know if that's something you want to co-sign the move from Drake London inside to outside.
I'm cool with them moving the receivers around the formation in order to take advantage of
seems
to create
like a calculated risk
to
right?
create mismatches against the defense. But I will hope that it is specific to whatever defenses that they're facing, and not just like a, let's just throw Drake London outside because we can.
Yeah, and you need to find the root of the
of the problem.
Sure.
Yeah.
Anyways, talking about basketball news, two things to mention really quick here before we get into talking about the spring game a little bit more. Javez Goodwin is back. He's returning for another season with the USC Trojans. And a newcomer is coming in, Boogie Ellis, a transfer from Memphis. Tell me this isn't the coolest name of all time.
I saw the name Boogie Ellis, and I just thought, that is an outstanding basketball name. outstanding basketball
name. You tell me someone's named Boogie Ellis, I'm like, yeah, they were playing in the ABA.
I mean, and they were good, right? Like, they were like, they were baller in the NBA. No, Boogie Ellis is I mean, just on the Alicia, what do you call it? The Michael
Index?
The Michael Index on the Alicia Index of names. Like, Boogie Ellis is outstanding. Just like Taj Eady. Taj Eady was a great name, too. Like, it just sort of rolled off the tongue, and he's now heading off to the NBA. So, like, it's kind of fitting that USC has essentially found somebody to potentially replace Taj Eady in Boogie Ellis. So he's a guard out of Memphis. He averaged 10 points last year, 6'3", just a guy who can score, who can find his own shot. And I think that's a very exciting that USC is dipping back into the transfer market. They missed out on Joseph Yusufu, who I really would have loved to see. Yesufu, yeah, I'm just messing up the names. Yesufu, who was in the transfer portal as well and was sort of considering his options. USC missed out on him. He's heading to Kansas. But to be able to go back into the transfer portal, I want Andy Enfield to really go all in on the transfer portal because it clearly worked for USC this past year. Find your big time recruits that you can get and then find your transfer guys to fill out the rest of your roster. I think it's a winning formula, and Boogie Ellis is definitely part of it. And it's good to get Chavez Goodwin back too. Just one thing to say on him, as a veteran forward that USC can bring back, having lost Evan Mobley, maybe losing Isaiah Mobley, they need his presence under the basket. So that's good.
Yeah, with Chavez back, they're not in a ravine of talent loss.
I should throw things at you when you do these things.
I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. We're talking about the spring game a little bit more. Coming up next. All right, Alicia, I want to turn the page, talk about the spring game. We've put together a list each of our five things we want to see out of the spring game on Saturday. Let's go back and forth sharing one of those things. It's one thing on your list of five things you want to see Saturday at the Coliseum.
Yeah, I just want to see Brew McCoy out there. He's the one guy that I really haven't seen in the practices I've attended so far because he missed the first couple of weeks. So I think that it's been hard to evaluate USC's wide receiver core because they have been missing a bunch of guys. And I think that you have Brew McCoy and Drake London out there, Gary Bryant Jr., Katie Nixon, Michael Jackson, John Jackson, we'll get a better sense of what the pecking order is there, and we'll get a better sense of what USC is doing with the wide receivers now that Brew McCoy should be back and ready to go as far as participating in the scrimmage. So, yeah, I'm looking forward just to seeing what reality looks like with that group.
For sure. Where the pecking order kind of lies, I think, is going to be really fascinating. We expect Drake London to be, you know, the top of the food chain there. But who's number two? Is it going to be McCoy? Is it going to be Nixon? Is there a chance Gary Bryant gets in there? I don't know. Is there going to be a pecking order, or are they just going to be able to distribute the ball evenly? I don't think necessarily that we'll learn that in a spring game setting, but just being able to see all those guys eat would go great towards building that confidence in that receiving core going forward. For me, it's about the confidence in Keaton Slovis. Number one on my list is seeing Keaton Slovis be back and back to the form that we talked about in 2019. I think I keep going back to, even though he had an off year in 2020, his 2020 still allowed him to be the best quarterback in the conference. And that, to me, just tells you how high the ceiling is for Keaton Slovis. If his bad year can still make him a first-teamer in the conference, like, rightfully so, too. Like, I even though he had a bad season, he still produced. He was still great in the fourth quarter in every game except for Oregon. And those are the things you want to see out of Keaton Slovis. But can he get that accuracy back? Can he get that zip on his ball back? Can he continue to have his spiral back? He looked good in the practice I saw last week at the Coliseum, but what's that going to be like with a whole bunch of live bullets going around, as Clay Helton would say, in a spring game setting?
Yeah, and that's the thing of the early practices that we saw. We really, the kinds of things that plagued Slovis last year, I didn't notice them at all in the practice setting. So it's easier to, though, to be not having those issues when you're just throwing against air. And I think it will be exciting to see Keaton have to sort of prove himself when the, you know, another Heltonism, when the bullets are flying.
For sure. Number two on my list is the Jackson Dart experience. We talked about this a little bit last week. I want to see what Jackson Dart can do in a scrimmage when everything is live. Let him be Jackson Dart. And I want to see what that means. Because it's either going to be really positive or really negative, and I don't know what it's going to be, and let it happen.
Yeah.
Like, if he's the guy who can improvise and have that kind of Sam Darnoldism in him, let him do it. Because that could be the difference in where he ultimately gets rated above or behind Miller Moss, right? So going forward, that's potentially the wrinkle that he can bring. Allow him to be that star, or allow him to make mistakes. And mistakes at this level, I don't think necessarily are a bad thing for, at this stage in his career, but allow him to make those mistakes or have the ability to flash and show his greatness or whatever, you know?
I mean, yeah, and that's the thing, is that when you have quarterbacks in spring, especially young quarterbacks, freshmen, early enrolled quarterbacks, if they make mistakes, all you want from them is to learn from them. I think that was one of the things that Harold talked about with Keaton, is that, you know, if he was making a mistake, that's not a problem. He just needs to learn from that mistake. And that's one of the things that he did very well, is that he didn't make that same mistake twice. That's what helped him rise up that quarterback battle. So I think that'll apply also to Miller Moss. I think that it'll also apply to Mo Hassan. You know, we will get a better look at Mo Hassan in this outing than we will have gotten in any of the practices that we've seen. So for me, I agree with your assessment that it's, you know, I'm excited to see Jackson Dart, but I think also I'm excited to get a better sense of what the backup battle sort of looks like with those guys. But you know, for me, the next thing that I'm looking forward to is, well, I don't know, that I want to see is just the offensive line. I want to see them have a rebound from this last Saturday practice. I want to see them respond to getting worked over the last few practices that we've seen. I want to see them just sort of stand up and show that they are progressing from day to day, from week to week, and give me a little glimmer of hope. Give me something to make me think that something can be different this year.
Yeah, you need them to stand up and shout and stand up and let it out and really be the rock stars that they could be with the experience that they have on that offensive line.
Yeah, sure.
What's your number three?
My number three is something we talked about, the tight ends. I want to see how USC is using the tight ends. I want to see if anything's different about the way that they're using the tight ends. I want to see if we can see any real progress from the tight ends. I want to see if Eric Cromenhoek is having as good of a spring as Deggy said he was. I want to see Lake McCree and get a better look at him as well. I did like what I saw from him just catching passes in practice, but it's different when you see guys in real life. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that, at least to get a sense of, you know, how are they going to be using the tight ends this year? And is it going to be fruitful the way that they're using them?
Yeah, I'm right there on board with you. I want to see what the role is going to be and how it compares to sort of Drake London, like we talked about before. For me, number three is all about transfers. I want to see the Texas trio, as I'm calling them, Keontae Ingram, Katie Nixon, and Xavier Alford. Katie Nixon from Texas by way of Colorado, but still from Texas. What are those guys? How do they fit in? We know that Xavier Alford has gotten first team reps. Keontae Ingram has gotten first team reps, and Katie Nixon has gotten first team reps at times. So these guys could all be main players in where SC goes this year. They're going to play a huge role in that. So what can they show for their first time in front of fans at the Coliseum? I don't know. I want to see it.
Well, especially with Alford, if they keep having Isaiah Pulumau playing nickelback, then Alford will be somebody that I think fans will get to see a bit of on Saturday. And also Keontae Ingram, he's been right up there in that sort of first team rotation. And he's a big dude who I think can make a big impression in his first showing against in the Coliseum.
That running back unit really is weird to me in the sense that, like, are they just all on the same level and it's just all just going to be split evenly again?
I think it might be.
It's going to have to be, right?
I think basically you've just introduced Keonta Ingram where Marquise Stepp was.
Yeah, or is Keonta Ingram just going to, like, take a step forward and he's going to be the Rojo and just get more carries that way? I can't see that, but maybe.
That's the other thing. Well, okay, maybe not where Marquise Stepp was, but in the sense of, like, having just three guys that you're rotating through.
Right.
But, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Keonta Ingram is the first guy. Oh, here's the problem.
But if it's three guys,
I can see all three of them being the first guy on the field for USC in any given game.
Sure, but doesn't that suck for Keenan Christon? Like, Keenan Christon brings an element that those other three do not have.
Yes, but those other three bring an element that Keenan Christon doesn't have. And, like,
sure,
those other three bring a different element than any of the other three have. So then it's, like, hard to decide, well, who is the best guy for the job at any given moment? Because maybe you have Vi Malapai on the field when you needed Keenan Christon to burn through a defense. And maybe you have Stephen Carr on the field when you needed Vi Malapai to, you know, break a few tackles and just gut out a third down. Maybe you have Keonta Ingram on the field when it would have been good to have Stephen Carr out there hitting a home run. And maybe you have Stephen Carr out there when you need Keonta Ingram to be the power guy. So, like, I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I am excited to see Ingram, though, because I think he's just sort of the new shiny toy and he looks the part.
Yeah, and number four on my list, two more Texas guys. Cortland Ford and Casey Collier, the left tackles. Ford, first-team guy. Collier, second-team guy. I want to watch them and see how they compare to each other, even though I don't know if that's totally easy to see when they're not on the field at the same time. But, yeah, how are those guys doing at left tackle? I think that's going to be huge for SC going forward when you have to replace AVT, who was clearly the stalwart on USC's offensive line last year.
Yeah, and that gets back to my offensive line. I want to see something that gives me hope. And either of those guys could do it.
Yes, ma'am. What's your number four?
Okay, so this is like a two-parter, my number four. It's kind of, I want to see more of Joshua Jackson and Michael Jackson III. Mostly because I want to see, like, can they show up in these live periods. Like, we've seen them flash in practices so far in the first couple of weeks, and they look bright. But both of them are kind of working with the second team, and, like, I want to see what they look like when the gloves come off and when things really matter. Joshua Jackson looks like he could be a viable contributor for USC this year at corner, but it's so early, it's hard to say. Michael Jackson III looks like he could be someone who gets reps, early reps, as a wide receiver, but it's just early to say. And part of that is too, it goes back to what my first one was. So much of what we saw in the first 2 weeks was limited by who was missing. You know, Chris Steele was missing. I think Dorian Hewitt missed some time. You know, on the offense, Brew McCoy was missing and Kyle Ford is still limited and all that kind of stuff. Like, with more of those guys back, like Chris Steele being back, Dorian Hewitt and Jaden Williams all going forward, like, and Isaiah Taylor Stewart, like, who are the ones getting those first team reps? Second team reps will be more realistic in this scrimmage than what we saw at practice because those guys are back now. So, like, we'll get a little bit of a sense of, are these guys actually in line to compete for real playing time this year, or are they sort of spring wonders?
Yeah, and I think of Jonathan Lockett as the guy who, every time we saw Jonathan Lockett in practice, like, man, this dude's, like, insanely good. He can, like, every single practice, he's making havoc plays, and he's doing this, and he's doing that, and you never saw it, like, on the football field on Saturdays. And I think part of it was because he was behind guys in the pecking order.
And then when he got in there, he got injured.
And he would get injured. And then other times it's just like, maybe he was someone who just was a practice superstar. I don't know. But you want to see Josh Jackson and Michael Jackson break that mold and see what they can build on that opportunity, because spring's all about opportunities, right? We talked about it with Brandon Peely going down. Like, if that's the open door for Sakona, then take it, run with it, see what you can do with it, with that opportunity. What's your number five thing you want to see on your list?
I just want it to be exciting. I want the fans in the stand to create some energy. I want the players to show off. I want it to be lively and aggressive, and I want there to be big plays, and I want there to be fireworks, and I want it to just be fun. That's, I mean, that's the general gist of it, is that, you know, football should be fun, and I think that this is the best time to showcase that at the Coliseum on a, you know, hopefully on a beautiful April Saturday, full pads, live tackling, a crowd, you know, like, let it come to life. Let it be something that people remember.
Yeah, you want it to bring you to life. my number five thing, certainly, I'm all for making the spring game feel good. If nothing else, then because
injuries.
Yeah. Well, that goes without saying. Making the spring game feel good. I have so much nostalgia for the Trojan Huddle, and what that used to be. And part of me thinks that, like, is some of that just nostalgia and blind nostalgia, where we always think that things were better when we were a kid, and maybe if we went back and relived it, we realized that that probably wasn't the case, but maybe not. I don't know. But I miss the spring games of old. I want this to feel like the spring games of old, even if it's just a little bit of nostalgia. Give me some exciting plays. Give me something to remember. I think everyone would be on board with that, even if it's just a feel-good vibe of being at the Coliseum with fans there. Who knows? But number five on my list is I want to see IPM, Isaiah Polamau, and what he can do this season. And I want to see it starting in the spring game. We've talked about it before. Players who have taken that leap from good to great, Chenna Nwosu, Talanoa Hufanga, those guys went from good players to All-Americans. I think IPM is one of those players who can take that leap. Do I know he's going to make it? No, but I think he's definitely someone who could. And if he's going to take that leap, I think it starts with something like a good showing in the spring game. The interesting thing about IPM is he's been moved around a little bit. He's been, at Nickelback, trialed at Nickelback a little bit?
Yeah. So because of Max Williams' injury, they trialed him on Saturday at Nickelback. And that's such an interesting decision to make, isn't it? Like, he is not who I would have... Chase Williams actually played Nickelback for the first couple of seasons that he was at USC. So I'm a little bit surprised that they move IPM up there. But I'm wondering if they were sort of taking the example of Talanoa Hufanga and, like, get him closer to the line of scrimmage and just see what kind of havoc he can wreak. It's an interesting experiment. But, like, I would like him to prove that that's more about doing what's best for him and less about they don't like their options at Nickelback. Because one of the things that I always say is you can tell when they moved Ajayna Harris to safety, that told you something about how confident they were in, like, the safeties that they had available to them. I think it's a really bad sign for Britton Allen that they move Isaiah Polamau to nickel. I think it's a bad sign for the other guys who might have contended for that nickel spot that they move IPM there. So I want it to be less about necessity and more about, you know what, IPM could absolutely dominate in that role. And I'm curious. I would like to see him do that. But he has to be the one to prove it.
Right, for sure. And can it happen as soon as the spring game? I don't know. We will see. This all leads us to one final little tidbit here, a Slack message we got from Evan. How good do you think Maximus Gibbs will be? Evan, he's named Maximus Gibbs. The greatest name in football history, I think, is Maximus Gibbs. I swear, it's good.
It is, for a offensive lineman, it's outstanding. Yes, absolutely. How good will he be? I don't know. I think he has the potential to be good. He's got good size. He's reasonably athletic. I think that with offensive linemen, it's so hard to tell. It's extremely hard to tell, especially at USC, where, like, guys I thought would work out didn't, or haven't, or may not. You know, I don't want to, like, give a cop out answer, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to tell. For the most part, all those guys in the offensive line are in a weird way, almost going to have to wait until next year, with the exception of the tackles like Ford and Collier, who are going to get their chance this year. Next year is when the guard, no pun intended, the old guard is going to move on, right? Your Nylons, your Voorhees's, your Jimmins's, your McKenzie's, all those guys are going to be gone next year. And that's really when you can dig into to all the talent that USC has brought in. The three-star talent that they've gotten that has supposedly been more scheme-fitting type of guys. How can they fit in? And Max Gibbs, if you feel like, is someone who doesn't fit the body type that all the other ones have. So many of the other ones are tall, lanky guys. Max Gibbs,
more of a guard kind
of. Yeah, body. more of a big guard. What can he do on that offensive line? I don't know. We'll have to see when that comes to be. But yeah, that's going to wrap up this episode. Thanks for listening. As always, episode 406, talking about the spring game upcoming on Saturday, 1 p.m. on the Pac-12 Network, or if you're lucky to be there at the Coliseum. Until then, we will catch you. Hopefully we'll do a car cast, maybe, perhaps, on Saturday after the spring game. So look forward to that as well. Alicia, you got a final word?
The final word is crowd, as in it's cool that USC can have a crowd at the Coliseum.
It is indeed.
Do your part, get vaccinated, wear a mask, and we'll get more of these things.
This is true. All right. Until then, we'll see you next time. See ya.
See ya.